Today's reading is from Matthew. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like this. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, all of them became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a shout, "Look, here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him." Then all those bridesmaids got up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise replied, "No, there will not be enough for you and for us. You had better go to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they went to buy it, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went with him into the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the other bridesmaids came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he replied, "Truly, I tell you, I do not know you. Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." The word of God for the people of God.
Kylie, thank you very much. I invite you to take out your outline for the message this morning as we continue in our series on margins. Whenever I hear that parable, I am reminded of the parsonage I lived in my first church. I was single, so I lived in this house by myself, and when winter arrived, about like it did here this week, I would think how it's not only wasteful, it's expensive to heat this whole house for just me and a dog. So I bought a kerosene heater to cut down on the cost of the furnace bill. And aside from the extra effort of having to carry it outside regularly to fill it up with fuel, it was a very efficient supplemental source of heat. But I learned something very important about kerosene heaters. You better keep your eye on them when they start to run low on fuel. Sometimes I would get distracted working, watching television, and the fuel ran out. When that happened, it didn't just burn out, it smoldered out. It would emit this black, oily smoke that would fill the house. Any money that I saved went out the window, literally, because I'd have to open the windows and the doors and try to get the smoke to blow out of the house. I think about that experience with Jesus' parable, especially the line that says, "Our lamps are going out." Well, those would have been olive oil lamps, and if an oil lamp is about to burn out, it's probably not a pretty sight. Jesus tells this parable using what would have been a very popular scene in first century Palestine, a wedding party. There was a particular tradition in which the bridesmaids would go and meet the groom and escort the groom to the wedding party. In Jesus' story, there were 10. 5 of the bridesmaids prepared for the possibility that it would get dark when that time came. They took extra oil with them for their lamps. The other 5 didn't take anything extra. They just took their lamps. Sure enough, the bridegroom was delayed, and when the call went out that he's on the way, the bridesmaids started lighting their lamps, and the 5 who realized we don't have enough oil in our lamps to keep burning, they said to the other 5, "Would you give us some of yours?" And the other 5 said, "No, go get your own." And while the 5 were off after hours looking for oil for their lamps, they missed the party. Now, what's a unique twist with this story is that Jesus commends the 5 who are seemingly selfish and calls them wise. It's almost like a counter to Jesus' teaching in which he had spoken admonitions like, "Lay down your life for another. Take up your cross and follow me. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." You could say the whole Christian ethic is based on the simple premise, be a servant to others. And now Jesus commends people who seem to be selfish. Why? Sometimes it helps to look at the way a story is placed, particularly in the Gospels. This story is only told in Matthew's Gospel. Right before it is another parable, a parable about a master who left a servant in charge of the household. The parable that comes right after is the one we know as the parable of the talents. That's where a wealthy landowner has left resources in different amounts into the charge of his servants while he's away. So there seems to be a servant theme going on, in which right in the middle between those two stories is this story that doesn't seem to fit about bridesmaids with oil and lamps. Could it be that the gospel writer of Matthew is wanting to talk to would-be servants of Jesus and to say, I want you to think about the fuel of a servant? Perhaps the point was that Jesus understood that a depleted, burned out, smoldering servant is not a pretty sight. As the old saying goes, if you get all used up, that simply means you're of no use. So what is the fuel of a servant? Let me just give you the answer. At least it's my answer. You think about what it might mean for you, but I believe the fuel of a servant is time. Time. If you think about it, there are a lot of good answers. Love is a fuel. Faith is a fuel. Compassion is a fuel. All of those are necessities for Christian servanthood. But without the time to give to other people, there's no capacity for those gifts to find expression. What if we look at the story about bridesmaids who brought a margin of resources with them as a message to servants about what it looks like to bring margins of time to our living? What would be some lessons we could take away from this story? One, clearly, is that we all have to fill our own lamp. We have to fill our own lamp. The five bridesmaids who didn't bring any extra oil begged of the others, give us some of yours, and they said, no, if we do that, there will not be enough for us and for you. As selfish as that seems, Jesus is making a point. Some things in life can't be borrowed. Taking care of yourself is not a responsibility anybody else can do. It's up to us. It's up to us to rest. It's up to us to exercise. It's up to us to find our own quiet time, to keep our sanity mentally and spiritually. Some things, they can't be borrowed. Typically, those are issues of time. This past week, Pastor Javon led a devotion at our staff chapel, and it was based on last week's message, Margins of Grace. He asked everybody to write down on a piece of paper, why do you need grace? Why do you need grace in your life? Write it down. Don't put your name on it, he said. Keep it anonymous. We're going to pass them around. So everybody wrote. He collected them. He passed them back out. And we were all to read them and pass them on. Read them, pass them on. So we all just about read everybody's. One of them stood out to me. Somebody on our staff, and I don't know who it was, said, I need grace because I've not had a vacation in over a year, and I'm weary. Now that stood out to me, because the folks in that room are ones who need to be able to fill the tanks of other people. We can't fill anybody's tank if we're running on fumes. Notice on the outline there's a scale. And on that scale, you have on one end of it completely depleted, and on the other, full energy. Where are you on that scale? Mark where you are. Are you on the depleted side? Are you leaning toward full energy? If you're anywhere to the left of full energy, what would it take to move to the right? Do you need to take more time for yourself? Do you need more time to pray, to be quiet, to be alone? Do you need time to exercise? Do you need time to do things that rejuvenate you? How many times do we let self-rejuvenation get to be the last on the list? Because we say, I've got to do all these things for other people first. I don't have time for that. Maybe it's time to go see a counselor or a spiritual director in order to be healthy. What do you need time for if you are to be at your healthiest? Consider another observation about this story, that in this parable we understand the truth that we have to also build margins for what brings joy. Build margins for what brings joy. The bridesmaids planned ahead of time to take extra oil with them, not even knowing that they're going to need it. Why? Not just so that their lamps would burn, it was so that they wouldn't miss the party. That was the goal. They understood the whole reason we're here is for the party. We're here for the joy. We don't want to miss out. There is a joy that comes from serving people that cannot be replaced by anything else. That joy that comes from knowing God has used you to help another person, there's nothing else that replaces that. And often we have to take a chunk of our time to devote just for that purpose. Somebody sent me an article this week from the Washington Post. It's based on the study that I shared with you a couple of weeks ago from the Pew Research Center, saying that millennials are leaving the church in greater and greater numbers. The writer of the article is a columnist for the Post who is a millennial herself, and she said, yep, that's right. My generation does not see a need for church. But then she made observations about her fellow millennials. She said, I'm watching my generation as we get on career tracks, as we get success focused, as we struggle with relationships and understand what it means to be healthy. And I think about the things that go on in church and what happens. What happens if churches start to close because we left them behind? She writes these words, what happens when sleeping, working, and gaming more than our elders begins to make less sense? If we're closing the church doors behind us, we'll have to find somewhere else to tend our spirits and our hearts. Albert Schweitzer said almost a century ago, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those who will have sought and found how to serve. It's true, you know. This past week, I went to an Indiana clergy gathering. It comes every year at this time. And I remembered when I arrived late after the event started that I also arrived late last year when the event started. The reason I remembered it is because I sat next to the same pastor who was probably arriving right before me. It was Reverend Roby Wood, who is pastor of the United Methodist Church in Boston, Indiana. How many of you had no idea there's a Boston, Indiana? It's right below Richmond. And during the presentation, the person leading it said, now turn to somebody who's with you and share what you're passionate about. So I turned to Roby and he said, oh, I am passionate about helping underprivileged people. That's where I get my joy in ministry. He said, something they're doing in their church this year is feeding people in the community. He said, we've learned we have a lot of hungry people in our neighborhoods. So they've started putting on these meals, and they're not peanut butter and jelly affairs. They are full-blown barbecues and steak cookouts. But he said, when it came to recognizing the difference it made, he didn't talk about the people they were serving. He talked about his congregation. I wrote down the words he spoke because I didn't want to miss it. He said, they, talking about his church, are more agreeable, they get along better, and they complain less since they started these meals. We all tend to get over ourselves when we get out of ourselves. Once again, notice on your outline, there's another scale. Hypercritical, extraordinarily happy. Where are you on that? What might move you to the right? What if you took a chunk of time, just like five of the bridesmaids took a margin of fuel and devoted it to serving others? As you think about that, take a look at the video this week that spotlights one of our members.
One person said to me, "I saw you yesterday. Do you live here?" No, I don't, but I love this church and I love serving here. I'm involved with Back to School. I do the Welcome Center desk. I usher on Sundays for the 11 o'clock contemporary. I am involved, I'm one of the coordinators for Family Promise. I'm also part of the Crooked Creek Food Pantry. I'm there because I love it. There are so many families out here who do not have the funds to eat a healthy, balanced meal, and they could come to the pantry and we're there to help them. My granddaughter is disabled and I have to take her for her blood work and her transfusions. Sometimes it's like everything is pulled together and I may be tired, but either I'll call and say, "Hey, you guys, I can't make it," or "Give me a chance to take a nap and then I'll be there." I would just like to see people take the chance and get involved. The Bible speaks of serving as being a spiritual and temporal way of giving and giving the results to God. And I take that seriously. The end of last year and the beginning of this year, I had a lot of complications from cancer. And, you know, I was like, "God, just, I'm always praising you. I'm giving you everything that I can. What do I need to do? Please help." And God is, he's there. He's always, always there. And he's always giving you what he thinks you need.
Don't miss the two dots that got connected. The faith that sustains her facing cancer and serving other people. It gives her a peace. It gives her a contentment. Many of you serve in lots of places. I see you all the time serving. You probably don't need to add more service to your list. If you're getting joy out of it, keep at it. But if you're not serving in a place that might move your contentment to the right, take your insert that you have with you this morning and notice all of the places there are to serve in this list. If you don't have one with you for some reason, they're available where? In the fellowship hall? You can pick them up in the fellowship hall. And there's a lot on this list. This is probably something you want to take home and read, or you may have time today to do it. And observe places that you might want to try in giving a little bit of your time to serve. Now, we are featuring some of the things on this list right across in our fellowship hall this morning, where you can get a donut and a cup of coffee. And go to some of the tables featuring the volunteer needs we have in hospitality, in our family ministry, and in our missions and outreach area. You can look at places where you can serve, talk to the volunteers there, ask them what they enjoy about it, what can you do perhaps to be a part of that. And there are places on the tables where you can leave your form this morning. So you can leave it there or you can bring this back. A simple little way to say, how can I devote a margin of my time intentionally for helping others? One last thought about this parable. Notice that along with filling our own lamp and building margins that lead to joy, there's also the point about building margins for the unexpected. And that's the focus of the story. It says, they took extra oil with them, and as the bridegroom was delayed, that was the point. There was an unexpected delay, but five of them were ready for the delay. They took some margin with them. The others did not. In this busy, frenetic, fast-paced fast-paced world of ours. It's hard to build into our lives margins of time where we're available when we pass a place of need to stop and to help somebody because we're so busy. There are other things that are waiting on us, things that are pressing us. And it has to be an intentional effort to build some margin. There was an experiment at Princeton Seminary years ago. Three different groups of seminary students were asked, each of them, to prepare a message on the Good Samaritan, the person in need, where somebody stopped to help them. And the goal of the experiment was to get across campus to deliver their message to a group that was waiting on them. This is where the experiment began to differ. One group was told, you're already late. You must get there as fast as you can. The people are sitting in the room waiting on you. The next group was told, the people are arriving now. You're not late, but you probably need to go pretty quick. The last group was told, they're not going to be there for a little while. You can take your time. Now, what they did not know is that along the path of each of them would be a person on the ground moaning as in pain. You can probably predict how the experiment turned out. It showed that the more urgent a person feels, the less likely they are to stop and respond to a need for help. And remember, this is seminary students preparing a message on the Good Samaritan. How much truer might that be for all of us in our everyday lives? When we build margins of time into our life, leave early, purposely plan extra time, how much freer are we when we see a need to be available to stop? I'll never forget this lesson slapping me in the face one time by a wise retired pastor who watched how I arrived at a board meeting late every time. And I always said the same thing. I got caught on the way here, and I did. It was not a lie. I was often caught with a last-minute telephone call. Walking out of the office, a person who said, Rob, I need you for a minute. And as I shared that with the person, he said, Rob, I'm not saying this to be rough on you. I'm saying it to help you. You'll always have people who need you. And if you don't build extra margin into your time to just leave early, you will make helping people a matter of holding up others. So notice again on your scale, always behind, always ahead. Where are you on that one? Let me close with a story that I think wraps up this whole matter of availability and the difference that our serving can make. It involves Kenny Moore II, who is becoming a well-known name in the starting defensive lineup of the Indianapolis Colts. While he had a great breakout year last season and a strong one so far this year, 2 years ago at this time, he was working hard just to make the team. He was a rookie. It was the week of Thanksgiving, and Kenny had just left a community event of the Colts handing out turkeys to people. He was on his way home, downtown Indianapolis, and he was stopped at an intersection and all of a sudden heard screeching tires and then the awful, terrible sound that a dog makes when wounded. He looked around and he saw this young white guy about his age just sobbing over the dog. And he thought, somebody's got to stop and help. Whoever hit the dog did not. They kept going. And as he's looking around and realized, nobody's going to stop. They're in a hurry. It's Thanksgiving week. They probably got a lot of stuff they're trying to get done before going out of town. So he said, I'm going to be that guy, then I got to do something. So he ran over and said to the guy, we've got to get your dog to a vet. Let me help you. And he helped him pick the dog up, bleeding, and put them in his own car, in Kenny Moore's car. And he got on his cell phone, he found a nearby vet, and they went to the vet, and the vet said, I don't do surgery here. I'm sorry, but if you don't get that dog into surgery soon, it's going to die. And Kenny Moore said, oh, we're going to find another one then. So the vet told them where to go, and they were driving on the way, and he introduced himself to the other guy, and the only thing he knew about this young man is that that dog saved his life. Here's what he learned later. The young man's name is Max Dixon. He grew up in London, England. His dad works for Fidelity Investments. He had a good upbringing, but when he hit 16 years old, an anxiety disorder knocked him off his feet. Depression set in, and all he knew was he could not live anymore in this life. His parents struggled. He got involved with unhealthy influences. Sometimes he would be gone for days on end and his parents wouldn't know where he was. All they knew is that their son saw no reason to live. The only thing that kept him from taking his life is he feared what would happen to his younger siblings. When he got to be 19 years old, he said to his parents one day, "A friend of mine's on a backpacking trip in Costa Rica and he asked me to come and join him." His parents said, "Well, maybe that'll help. Why don't you do that?" Well, he got to Costa Rica. He not only loved it, he got a job working in a hostel, and at first everything was great until it wasn't. The depression set in again, the anxiety set in, and he was about to end his life in Costa Rica until Chica came along. A dog that had been abused by people would bite anybody who got near her, except Max. He started taking care of her, and he found that now that he has a reason to take care of another creature, he had a reason to live. The dog literally saved his life. Before long, he was in a whole different place. He called his parents one day. He said, "I'm doing great." They said, "What changed?" He said, "I got a dog." He said, "I know it's time for me to leave here, but I can't come back there. I can't live with you in London. I'm going to go to Indianapolis where Grandma and Grandpa are." So he came to Indianapolis with Chica, went to culinary school, got a job as a cook, and a few days before Thanksgiving was out walking Chica downtown, and Chica saw a squirrel and took off and got hit by the car. Not only was Chica about to die, he was about to die. Until he felt this strong arm reach around him and say, "I got you, man. I got you, man." He didn't know who it was. Kenny Moore got the dog in the car, went to the vet. He thanked him. Kenny said, "Man, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here with you." The dog was saved. Kenny was grateful. They became good friends. They've stayed in touch. They've texted. The father of Max, Drew Dixon, wrote a story about this called "Stay in the Game." You can Google that, find it on the internet. It is an absolutely wonderful, wonderful story. Kenny Moore, on his way home from a serving event, found a chance to make a difference in someone's life. He said, "It just goes back to that saying, be nice to everybody because you don't know what they're going through. I would never have guessed what he was going through in his life. I'm just glad I could be that relief." I don't know about you, but when I watch the Colts in a little while, I'm going to cheer like crazy for number 23. And when we do the same, we give other people a reason to cheer for us.